Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
What is happening, gang? We are live on the Inside Football Podcast with Bill Polian. In today's episode, we dive into a supersized wildcard weekend in the NFL. We've got it all covered, from the sort of games that I think you're going to be surprised Bill will think are close to the games that could be absolute blowouts. What are the mismatches? What are the close contests? We're going to dive into it and find out on today's episode of the Inside Football Podcast with Bill Polian. But before we do, I want to take a minute and talk about one of our favorite sponsors on the show, BetOnline. BetOnline would like to wish you a happy new year betting as we continue to march to the playoffs and beyond. BetOnline remains the number one spot for all your best sports wagering action for 2022. New year and a new updated desktop and mobile website to sign up today and receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Just use promo code BELIEVE, B-L-E-A-V, to get started. From football, basketball, hockey, boxing, and the UFC, right to your favorite Vegas casino game, don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for 2022. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to wager on all your favorite sports. BetOnline, where the game starts. All right, BetOnline's where the game starts. This is where Wild Card Weekend starts. This is the Inside Football Podcast with Bill Polian, and this is our look at the Wild Card Weekend in the NFL. All right, gang, it has been a busy week for everybody on the pod, but it's an exciting week because it is that time of the year where we've got playoffs and it's a supersized wild card weekend. It's hard to process. We're going to get a game on a Monday and it's a holiday, so I can stay up late and watch everything on Sunday night. It's pretty fun. Aren't you guys excited?
I'm especially excited for you just to be a step late on a Monday night, Scott.
Yeah, I'm pretty pumped. And you knew the second the Raiders made that kick, they were playing the 4:30 game on Saturday. Raiders Bengals just felt like the opening salvo
after an overtime.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sure that went over well with Mark Davis. So here we go. Yeah. All right. Well, let's dive in. Where are we starting this week, Bill?
Let's start with New England at the Bills. Okay. And what we're gonna do here, because we don't know, because of COVID, who's gonna play and who's not gonna play. So to discuss personnel matchups is really kind of a fool's errand, because you don't know who's gonna be in the game or not in the game. That's the wild card, no pun intended, that exists in this year's playoffs is COVID. So let's look at the numbers and compare them by the numbers over 17 games, which is very interesting. When I did the comparison, I said, wow, this is really, there's a lot here. So first of all, in passing yards per attempt, most important passing statistic, Bills 6.8, New England with a rookie quarterback, 7.7.
Pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Pretty good. Touchdowns and interceptions. The Bills 36 touchdowns, 16 interceptions. That's exactly where you probably want to be. New England 24 touchdowns, 13 interceptions. For a rookie, that's more than acceptable. So he's played very well. The passer rating 91.3 for the Bills, 95.5 for New England. So Mr. Mack has played very, very well by rookie standards, even by veteran standards, actually. Points for, Buffalo 483, points against 289, a whopping 194 differential.
Pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Yes.
Very.
New England points for 462, points against 303, so it's kind of close. And the differential is 159. Turnovers, Bills plus 8, New England plus 7. If I'm a bettor, I don't want to go anywhere near this game. It's too close to call. And that's why both of the games they played have been very close games. I'm not sure Bill Belichick, like Nick Saban last night, has anything really left in his trick bag other than trick plays. I mean, you can only play it so many ways. If Stevenson is back, that's a huge plus for New England because he can pound the ball. The Bills cannot pound the ball because they do not have a pounding runner. So it's up to the quarterback to do that. But this is, you know, they split the games. The road team won both regular season games. This is probably not a matchup that the Bills necessarily wanted, but because of the Chargers game, that's the way it worked out. And so this is anybody's game.
So obviously here, another wild card would be weather, right? But
and the weather does not look good. It's supposed to be 9 and a low of 3 on Saturday.
Yeah. Bill, talk about on this one, what it's like to play a team 3 times in a season from both points of view or overall or however you want to explain it.
Well, okay, first of all, if you've won twice, it's awfully hard to win the third time. Statistically, that's a fact. Secondly, if you split, it means that you're probably pretty close and that this game is a toss-up. And the weather, by and large, quarterbacks can throw the ball in bad weather, especially with gloves these days, receivers can catch it. Mac Jones is at a disadvantage because he's never played in this kind of weather before. So that's a slight edge to the Bills, but slight. This is a really tough game to call. It will usually come down to turnovers. That's usually where it'll divide and the winner will emerge. Exceedingly cold weather makes it difficult to hold the ball when you're running with it. So you get more fumbles or you got to work hard not to fumble in exceedingly cold weather.
And if the field is sloppy for one reason or another, because
it won't be, it'll be icy and frozen.
I should have said that. If the field, when it's difficult to play on a field, do you subscribe to the fact that it favors the offense because they know where they're going versus the defense have to respond? Right.
Generally speaking, but this field is notorious for freezing. We'll see steps the league takes to the league controls the playoffs, by the way, but the wild card round is their least intrusive round. So we'll see what they do to make sure that it'll be covered. That's for sure. But whether or not it's frozen and hard, which in my experience it is in this kind of weather, particularly in Buffalo.
Well, as you go through the other ones, could you kind of touch on two things you always hear at this time of year? One, it's important, who's hot? And two, it all comes down to matchups. Could you kind of just, as you do your analysis, kind of throw that in there for us?
Well, the who's hot is not.
That's a myth.
Yeah, that's a myth. The we proved that we had Jacksonville ran on us for 275 yards in the game prior to the playoffs, and we were playing Denver in the opening round, who was famous with Mike Shanahan for that running game, and we held them to, I believe, 59 yards.
Okay.
So hot means nothing.
Right.
matchups do mean something.
Yep.
Matchups do mean something. That's for sure. That's for sure.
They're looking at now, it could be 2 degrees with a real feel of negative 10 at kickoff, where literally the weather service is saying hypothermia is likely without protective clothing. I mean, it's going to be pretty cold.
Well, protective clothing. That's not an issue. It's not ideal, obviously,
right.
but it's not an issue. I mean, you put the Vaseline on the exposed portions of your body. You don't expose much of it, except for the crazy offensive linemen who want to wear short sleeves,
Tom Coughlin refused Vaseline.
You don't want to. George Allen was famous for not wanting to wear gloves in that weather, but it's now proven that you can handle the ball better with the gloves and throw it better with the gloves. So that's not really a problem. It's not ideal, but it's, and then they have the hot soup and the heat benches. We played in Carolina, we played a NFC championship game in -2, -3. And it was certainly uncomfortable, but you can play in it. And for Mac Jones, it'll be an issue because he's never played in it before. Now, as to matchups, again, this is a matchup that doesn't necessarily favor the Bills because New England's secondary, probably the best part of their defense. But and so the Bills have to have everybody in their receiving core healthy. And in the end, in the first game, it came down to Knox, the tight end, making a play. He was held, and it should have been called, but wasn't. Welcome to the playoffs. The game, was it? Well, it's immaterial. I'm thinking of a game that maybe it was the Charger game that sort of violated that officiating rule or officiating system. But generally speaking, in the playoffs, they're much more liberal in calling downfield penalties. Illegal contact is almost non-existent statistically this year. So that favors New England. There are a lot of things that favor New England in this game when you really start to think about it, including the matchups in the secondary. And Buffalo has to be healthy. They can't win with guys that, second and third line guys. They got to have the top guys out there. Moving on to KC and Pittsburgh, this is a much different picture. Kansas City points, passing yards average 7.3. It's right where you want to be. That's ideal. TDs 37 to 13. That's ideal. Passer rating 98.1. That's outstanding. Points for 480, points against 364, plus 116, plus 4 turnover margin. Pittsburgh, passing yard average 6.1. Ugh. TDs 23-11. For Ben Roethlisberger, that's not acceptable. For a rookie, it's okay, but not Ben. And we know that. We can see it with our eyes. It's not his fault. It's the receiver's fault, by and large. His arm's not as strong as it used to be, but the receivers don't catch the ball consistently. His passer rating is 88.3. That may be the lowest of his career. Again, receiver-oriented. Points for, 343. Points against, 398. Minus 55. And plus 2 in the turnover area. So what you have here is a pretty classic mismatch. I don't think the weather changes that a whole hell of a lot. Pittsburgh did a marvelous and courageous job against Baltimore, against a Baltimore team that had literally no secondary at the end of the game. Everybody who was anybody was hurt. And it went to overtime. But, kudos to them. But this looks like a typical, you know, 7-2 mismatch. So Kansas City should win this game. It's at Kansas City. What's the weather? Is probably going to be, well, it doesn't matter. Both teams play in bad weather, so it doesn't matter. Moving on to Cincinnati and Las Vegas.
Hey, Bill, real quick before we move on for that game, do you think that is there anything to like, and this is a total fan perspective, but is there anything to the sort of rallying cry that, you know, maybe this could be like a Peyton situation or a Ray Lewis situation, thinking about that Ray Lewis team that kind of snuck into the playoffs, that this team could rally around Ben and maybe get an extraordinary run here? There's just nothing in the data that would indicate that.
There's nothing in the data that indicates that. The rally around Ben thing really can be translated to receivers get open and catch the ball.
Yeah.
Anybody other than Pat?
Other than Pat. That's right. And by the way, people are taking away Pat at a land office rate because they realize he's the threat.
Right.
Yeah.
So this one, you know, I don't think there's, if there is rallying, and there may be some, it's on the road, number one and number two. I don't know that there's enough there to.
Right. To push up Sunday one more time.
And you know, Bill, one overall comment as we move forward, you know, with all the talk that you had actually, kiboshed, you know, oh, this is a crazy season. Everybody can beat everybody. When you look at who got in, other than Philadelphia, which at least still had a winning record, I mean, everybody in there had a very good, typical getting into the playoffs record, double-digit wins or more, very respectable. Nothing's crazy or extraordinary about who got in by their records this year at all.
Yeah, that's correct. That's absolutely correct. Pittsburgh is the only seventh team that is below par according to the numbers. And you could argue that, but for that timeout call, the Chargers would be in that spot.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
So,
that's a show unto it. That's a show unto itself.
Yeah. Okay. In Cincinnati's case, it's Las Vegas at Cincinnati. Weather is a factor here without question. And it's probably going to be less than ideal. So
we're looking at 25 and 14, maybe a little bit of accumulating precipitation.
Okay, so that benefits Cincinnati pretty greatly. There's no question that when a warm weather indoor team goes on the road in frigid weather, it's a factor. How much remains to be seen, but it's a factor. In Cincinnati's case, some really arresting numbers. And this gave me pause when I cast my all-pro ballot, which I already have done. The passing yard average, 8.7. Wow.
Yikes.
Wow.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
TDs, 36. Interceptions, 14. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Passer rating, 106.9, highest in the playoffs. Points for, 460 against 376, which is not great, plus 93, and zero neutral in the giveaway takeaway.
Zero.
So these numbers, when I did them, and I did them before I cast my ballot, gave me pause. Because someone I respect greatly in the league said to me, don't go to sleep on Joe Burrow. He is having a record year. He's just not on television. And so he doesn't get the publicity that the young man from Oregon in Los Angeles gets. Joe Burrow is having an MVP year. And when I looked at the numbers, I said, lo and behold, my buddy was correct. He was absolutely correct. He is having an MVP year. I didn't vote for him, but
but hey, you thought about it.
I thought about it. You bet. I thought about it. It was a close It was a close call.
Yes. Bill gave it very deliberate consideration, Joe, which is an honor. So
yeah, it was a close call. And you could argue it either way, by the way, because without him, I don't think the Bengals are anywhere near as good as they are. And certainly without Aaron, the Packers aren't. I mean, we saw that in Kansas City.
We learned it this weekend in both cases.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Okay, Las Vegas. Again, the quarterback you love to hate, 7.7, really good. And they throw the ball down the field as well as anybody can. And by the way, the 8.7 with Burrow is Ja'Marr Chase. That's Peyton Manning and Marvin Harrison country. So Las Vegas isn't quite that good, but they're nonetheless good. Touchdown 23, interceptions 14. That's not real good. And they have difficulty in the red zone unless they're giving it to the big back or throwing it to the tight end, which since the new coach has taken over, they are. So that's improving. Passer rating 93.8. That's good enough. Points for 374. Points against 439. Some of that is during Gruden's period of time. It's improved since because they're running the ball more, but it's still a liability. And minus 9 in the turnover area. So that's telling you, be careful here. So even though this is an outstanding passing team, and Jacobs has made it an outstanding running team, and they've committed to it, still defensively, despite the great rush front that they have, and it is great, they probably are, you wouldn't make them a favorite here, but neither are they the underdog that Pittsburgh is and should be. This is a team that if you can't block them, and the Chargers couldn't, they can beat you.
Right.
They're gonna knock your passer around because they can do the one thing that every passing team hates: the ability to just run over you with their rush front. They destroyed the Chargers. The quarterback did most of that on his own.
God.
And Cincinnati's offensive line is not a great pass blocking offensive line. So this game is going to be closer, I think, than people think, unless there are turnovers and unless, you know, the weather's a factor.
How big a deal is it, Bill, for them to be in the late window on Sunday and have to play this early window Saturday? Traveling.
It's a big deal. It's a big deal. The league poo-poos it. It's not. The sports science people will tell you it isn't. The idea that you play a full overtime, and then you have to go on the road on a short week.
Yeah,
not good.
It's like your comment about Thursday games, Bill.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So
Bill, in that instance, is it better for them to travel late? Is it better for them to travel early? What do you do?
It's better for them to do whatever they've done when they've gone to Eastern time zone all year. And now the sports science people will tell you, stay with the circadian rhythms. Going west to east is much harder than going east to west. So you stay with the circadian rhythms. You try to get there. You travel late, so you try to get there at night. You stay on your time during the whole process. But they may not have done that. They should not change for the playoffs.
Right.
You shouldn't change for the playoffs. Not at all. And by the way, we learned a sad lesson with that in Indianapolis, going into New England. Tampa Bay versus Philadelphia. yards per attempt, Tampa Bay 7.4. You know, that's right where you want to be. Philadelphia 7.3. That's a little deceiving, but they do throw the ball down the field pretty well. But it's nonetheless where you want to be. TDs, Tampa Bay 43-12. Woo! Yikes. Quarterback rating 101.6.
That guy must be pretty good there.
Pretty good, right?
Yeah, he's pretty good, I think. I think he's pretty good.
He might make it.
Yeah, I think he has a future in this league.
Philadelphia, 20 touchdowns, 10 interceptions. For their quarterback, that's good. That's okay. Because he's not really a highly functional quarterback or a typical quarterback. So that's okay. That's about what you expect from him. Passer rating of 89.2. You don't want it to be below 90, and it is, obviously. Points for the Bucs, 5.11, and they've given up 353.
Pretty good.
Which is, yeah, that's pretty good. Yes, it is. It's it really is pretty good. It's plus 158. And they're plus 10 in giveaway takeaway, because Tom doesn't give it away, and they have taken it away at a pretty good clip. So, this is a team that can outscore you. It's a team that can out defense you. In this particular case, Philadelphia lives on the running game. Philadelphia's offense is run, play action pass, and quarterback run. So they are really a mini Baltimore, if you will. They're a little more wide open in the passing game than Baltimore, and more efficient in the passing game than Baltimore. But it's not terribly different. But against Vita Vea, Sue, and company.
Good luck.
Good luck.
Have fun.
Exactly right. There's where the matchup doesn't match up.
Uh-uh.
Even though Philadelphia's offensive line is playing pretty well, I don't know that they match up with this outfit.
Yeah, it's a lot of mass to move in the middle.
Hey, Bill, one thing I was thinking watching the game this weekend, when you were a GM, did it give you agita? So, like, how do bonuses work? Or, like, basically when a player kind of achieves some sort of milestone and they get, you know, some sort of bonus, how does that affect the cap in the current year? Does that impact the cap in the future year? So, like, with Gronk this weekend getting that 85th catch, he got an extra $500,000. Does that affect you guys next year?
Yes, it affects it next year. Those are called not likely to be earned incentives.
So does that give you a little agita as the GM when you're watching going, uh-oh, the cap?
No.
Okay.
No, because the cap next year is going to be 208 or something in
right.
that vicinity. Now Tom refusing to leave the game until Gronk got his money is you know, that's what endears him to his teammates. So you can't, maybe the CFO is ticked off.
Yeah.
As the GM, I would be.
Exactly. In my experience, when I negotiated those things, truly, GMs were only to, if a guy made a not likely to be on bonus.
You're feeling pretty good. Okay. All right.
I mean, he's contributing enough. Yeah.
Yeah. Tom's face was priceless on the sidelines when whoever said, you're coming out, and he goes, no.
Yeah. Right. Welcome to the NFL. Someone asked me, does that happen often? I said, yeah, if your name's Brady or Manning or, you know,
or Gronk.
Something like that. What? You know, somebody right. like that. Ray Lewis. Yeah. Yes, it does. Happens often. It's not uncommon for a coach to be told where to go. Not usually the head coach, but assistant coaches are frequently told off by veteran star players.
Overruled by higher yeah. court.
Yeah. The old NFL axiom, players not plays.
Yeah.
So this game is... I don't know if you get the point spreads on these games, and they're probably not really relevant because, as we said at the outset, you don't know who's going to play because of COVID. But the issue in this game is that this, on the matchup side, this is not a good matchup for Philadelphia, not a good one at all. because they need to run the ball to win. And it's hard to run the ball against these cats when they make up their mind not, you know, not to do it. The statistics, by the way, yards allowed are, which is the league uses as the barometer. Most teams don't really look hard at, because much of that may be garbage time when it's third and 15 and they're running draws and things like that, you know, where it doesn't really factor. The matchup and what they want to do, the analytics tell you that this Philadelphia is a team that has to run, and it's awfully difficult to run against these cats when they make up their mind to stop.
Yeah, the visual eye test on this one isn't good. When you see Vita Vea and Sue just as a human and you go, hey, you got to run against these guys. Yeah,
that's right.
I don't know.
You know, right. You know, run through these two buildings in downtown New York.
Yeah. And even if you want to go, outside zone, Shaq and JPP are no slouches at setting the edge.
Boy, and you got White and David running around.
And White and David inside. Yeah.
What are we talking about? The spread on this one, Bill, is 8.5, which is a little surprising because Kansas City is 12.5. This one's 8.5. I thought this one would be north of 10.
It's interesting.
Yeah.
It's interesting. Yeah.
Well, the over-under is only 49. So I think they think this is going to be more of a low scoring, a little bit of a running game to kind of juice you into betting.
Well, Philadelphia is going to try and bleed the clock. You know, that's what they're factoring into. So if I'm Bruce, which he always does, Bruce Arians, I want to get off to an early lead and take them out of their run game. Okay, 49ers in Dallas. Interesting game. Passing yards per attempt, 49ers, an amazing 8.6. Now, part of this is rack, run after catch. Debo Samuel.
The Debo factor.
Yeah.
The Debo factor and the tight end, the Kittle factor.
Yeah.
The Kittle factor, right.
So.
Running by you or running over you.
Yeah. Yeah. Or through you. Right. So, I mean, they get a lot of big plays, chunk plus plays in the passing game. 26 and 14. That's okay. That's fine. 99.2 passer rating. That's fine. If you compare that to Dallas, 7.7 average per attempt, that's very good. 40 TDs, 18 interceptions, that's better than very good. That's exceptional. 104.8 quarterback rating, so much for Dak's slump.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then in the points department, 49ers, 427, 365 given up. The 365 is a generally speaking, a middle-of-the-road number for a playoff team, plus 62. Dallas is 530 points, 358, a whopping plus 172. And plus 14 in giveaway takeaway. So if I'm the 49ers, I better damn well hold on to the football. I better protect Jimmy, which is easier said than done. And we don't know if Trent Williams is going to play or not. And I better make sure that I take care of the football. If I'm the Cowboys, I'd like to get the 49ers out of their running game, but it's probably not feasible. So just play your normal game and make sure that the attack is balanced. Hope that Pollard is back there. Get all three receivers in there. Now, one of them is kind of on the limp. I can't recall exactly who it is yet because I haven't seen the reports don't come out yet, but you'd like them to have all three receivers and all four, including the tight end, who's a big weapon, back in there. And if they are, then I think Dallas is in pretty good shape. Plus, keep in mind that the 49ers, in a valiant effort, by the way, expended a ton of energy last week. And this is a real thing in football, despite the fact that we play once every 7 days. It's like basketball. When you're 20 points down at the half of basketball and you provide a stirring comeback and you get to the point where the game is tied and you take it into overtime, more often than not, you're out of gas by the time you reach overtime because you've expended so much energy climbing that mountain.
Yeah.
The shots don't drop, you know, the lift isn't there. You don't get the rebounds you should get. You know, how many times does the team who makes that stirring comeback and just falls short and goes into overtime lose? Quite a few.
A lot of times.
So,
yeah,
that's the case here. They expended a ton of energy coming back in that game. It was exciting. It was thrilling. It was hard hitting. How much do they have left in the tank to go on the road this week? That's going to be interesting.
So just because maybe this will be my last chance this season to say it, and Bill, I hear everything you're saying about turnovers and maybe an interception gene, but I am still in Jimmy G's corner. I just like that kid. He to me is a football player who gives you everything he got, he has. I mean, I just really, really hope for his sake he has a great game. I think he's a terrific player.
He does. He's excellent. And he's probably, if he goes on the market, he will be the most desirable guy out there. The problem is, what do you pay for a guy who in a 17-game season is probably going to play 12?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the problem.
Right? Now, if you're Washington and you got a nice guy in the bullpen.
Seems like a good deal.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, the other thing is, in Jimmy's case, he's been injured every year, or virtually every year. So, you know, how long, what's the cumulative effect of all those injuries? And there's no question that all those hits do take something out of your arm. There's no question about that. Arm strength diminishes with each succeeding punch you take. And so that's an issue you worry about with Jimmy long-term, but that's for another day. It's a discussion for another day. I agree with you. He's fun to watch. He's a competitor. He works his butt off. He's inspirational. He's not ideal, but no. You know, you'd love to have it.
And he's done what a veteran, what a true professional does with the Trey Lance. He just moved ahead, put his head down, and gave it everything he had. No complaining, no whining, nothing.
Yep. He's been a great teammate and a great leader. And all of those, he's 100 over 100 on all those intangibles.
Digging into the sort of depletion conversation, how granular do you guys get with it? Because in looking at this game, I would think, the Rams are a really tough team to play against from a secondary perspective. This was already probably a bad matchup for the 49ers with their secondary against the receiving corps for Dallas. How much does that weigh into sort of the thinking and how you approach? Because to me, that would be the area where this game could completely blow up if you're the 49ers.
Well, that's entirely possible. But the 49ers' way of attacking you is to run the ball in varying different ways. You know, speed option, sweeps, you know, traditional inside and outside zone. So they're trying to control the ball, bleed the clock, get the chunk plays out of play action and occasional gadget play. And especially if Kittle's there, from the passing game with Kittle, you would expect that Dallas, given its proclivity, would try to take Kittle away. That happens very often. And they probably try to take Debo away and say, let everybody else beat us. So the question is, can they stop the run well enough to allow everything else to work? And or on the other side of the coin, can the 49ers run well enough to allow everything else to work? From Dallas's perspective, go right after that 49er secondary.
Yeah,
now,
I mean, that's...
If the 49ers are able to use that wave rush where they have eight guys that they rotate in there and they keep coming like whirling dervishes as they did last week against relatively weak tackles. The left tackle is not what he was. He's on in Dallas. He's on his on the back nine of his career, probably on the 15th hole. And the right tackle's a liability and the left guard's a liability. So that's what San Francisco's trying to try an attack. So again, Dallas says, let's run the ball and knock them around a little bit. Let's put them in a situation where we get play action. Let's help the line as much as we can. And if we can get a lead, then we take the 49ers out of their running game. And the mismatch that is the biggest one is the one that you point out, 49ers secondary versus Dallas, a completely full Dallas receiving corps. But that depends on protection. And you know, the 49ers last week just decimated the opposition. And they destroyed another myth, by the way, which is that the Rams' offensive line is a dominant offensive line.
Right. Yeah,
guess
no,
what? They're not.
No. No. Andrew Whitworth had that, like, look of all of us who have hit 40 going, what am I doing here?
Yeah.
And the left guard was out to lunch. I mean, he was getting the living daylights beaten out of him.
It did not look good.
Something worse was San Diego.
Well, San Diego had a guy in there that couldn't play. I mean, that's the bottom line.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, you're out of people. I mean, so on the other hand, helping, you know, protecting the quarterback. There's a lot of rookie mistakes there that I think Brandon Staley will look back on and say, I didn't do that right. I didn't do this right. I didn't do that right. That's what rookie coaches do. They learn on the job.
And maybe take the points occasionally.
Well, you know, the idea of using that, we might as well address the timeout. The idea of using the timeout is not terrible because you have to presume that they're going to try and kick the field goal, period. Now, it didn't look like they were doing that. It looked like they were going to run it down, and because Carlson is so good, they take the longer field goal. And if he missed, so what, right? Everybody goes home happy. So now the question is, do you assume they're going to run the ball and try to get your best run defense on the field, or do you assume that they're going to run it down and kick the longer field goal? I would argue that the benefit you gain by calling the timeout and getting the right run group on the field is not as great as letting them kick the longer field goal. Cause if they miss, you're going to the playoffs for sure.
Exactly.
Right. And it certainly didn't work out. I mean, they got the two games they needed. I mean, down there, I mean,
yeah, yeah. Well, they got the run,
oh,
which
yeah.
allowed the field goal now to be a gimme for Carlson. So it's a risk reward deal. And that's one where analytics does not come into play other than what Carlson's make rate would be.
Yeah.
What comes into play is, okay, let me as a coach balance where am I better off with the the sole determinant being, how do I best get in the playoffs? And I'm not so sure he focused on that. That's where I would, if I had criticism, that's where it would be. Because the overarching goal is not to win the game, it's to get in the playoffs.
Exactly. I mean, because he got the gain in. I mean, he used every inch of those goalposts.
He did. He did. That's exactly right. Yeah, he did. And you might want to save the timeout to freeze him if necessary. So it wasn't quite as cut and dried as the color commentator wanted to make it. And he was even afraid to say it. He was, you know, I don't understand this. You know, just come out and say, hey, it's a mistake, right?
Yeah.
But no, it's kind of mealy mouthed. But the bottom line is that the overarching concern is how do you make the playoffs, not whether you win the game.
And also, I think some of it's the accumulation factor of he's made some interesting time management, timeout choices, and some interesting go for it on fourth down decisions throughout the course of the season.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, this is not like this was had they not gone for it in the Kansas City game, had they had sort of played a more normal, traditional sort of risk adverse style of football, I don't know that the timeout would be as highly questioned as it's been, you know, in the context of the conversation.
Yeah.
And when you look back, and it's reasonable to look back.
Yeah.
As much as I like Brandon Staley and, you know, I think he's going to be a terrific coach. But when you look back, had they beaten Kansas City with the 9 points that they left on the field,
it's not an issue.
It's never an issue.
Right.
Yeah. Those games and those decisions do factor over time.
Yeah. No, I mean, it very much to me felt like, okay, here is the accumulation of some kind of bad decisions throughout the course of the season that everybody's going to go. You knew the second the timeout was called, he's going to get killed.
Well, I'm hoping, because I like him as a coach, I'm hoping that he has people around him who will perhaps push him to reexamine this whole analytics approach and realize that there's a lot of hot air and a lot of that.
Yeah, and there's some value to it. You know, I talked to a coach this week that pointed out a number of valuable things that he gets from it. But the bottom line is that, you know, it's not the be-all and end-all. And I'm sure he doesn't look at it that way either.
But here's the thing to me about analytics, Bill. You know, it's like actuarial tables. They're built on a ton of data. It can never properly predict what's going to happen on any given situation. It's like,
that's correct. No. That's absolutely correct.
It's like flipping 49 heads in a row. It's still 50-50 on that 50th flip.
Well, that's the thing that drives me nuts about how people perceive analytics, right?
They don't understand it.
They don't understand that this is – analytics only work in the context of how long you play analytics out. So if we were playing a game where you can make that, let's just say in the Kansas City game, going for it on fourth down, if you had 10 opportunities to go for it on fourth down, yeah, you're going to make it six times. But are you willing to take that risk with looking at a 40% negative, knowing that you don't get the advantage of the spread of analytics? It's the dumbest way people.
But even then, Scott, football is a particularly difficult game to do this with because it's about analytics don't take into account the particular matchups, who you're across the line from, who, you know, who's tired, who's this, who's that. It is so broad spectrum, which is why it makes sense in the long, long, long run. But football, say more than pitching a guy in baseball or something, football, I think, is the hardest sport to apply in an individual situation because there's so many moving parts and there's so many factors.
Well, it's trend decision making. It's not analytic decision making. So that's the thing that drives me nuts. Do you want to stake your whole thought process on trend data? For me,
which just doesn't apply in a specific situation to begin with, and certainly not when there's all those other variables you can't put in there.
It can inform your thought process, but it should not be a decision-making proviso.
Bill, give us the final word on analytics.
Well, I'll give you an example of what occurred in the playoffs last year, which a coach shared with me. Early in the second half, he's on the goal line, and it's fourth down. He's at like, you know, fourth and goal from the three. He's got a play that they like against the defense that the opponent had shown regularly. So they knew what defense they were going to get based on the personnel that was in the game and all of that. And the analytics people say, go, you got to go in this situation. So the coach says, on balance, it's early, you know, it's not fourth quarter, I'll go for it. Forgetting that in the playoffs, you always take the points because playoffs are different. The opposition is better, you know, than you face during the regular season. So analytics really don't come into play. So you always take the points. But he said he decided to go for it. So they call the play. It's the right play. The receiver beats the defender by about a yard and a half, maybe 2 yards. The quarterback makes a little bit off-kilter throw, and the receiver can't make an all-pro Hall of Fame catch, and the ball bounces off his fingertips and goes incomplete. And they lose the game by the margin of the points they would have gained by kicking the field goal. Tremendous object lesson on just what both of you said. There are so many moving parts in a football game that analytics play less of a role by a lot than they do in baseball.
Exactly.
Not to say they're that you dismiss them, but they're not as valuable. And by the way, the statistic that I heard, Rick, and you may have a better one, is that going for it on fourth down is 50-50. It's not 60-40.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, and certainly at that level, you know, we all know the story of the high school coaches now and the pros who did it all the time. That's not the NFL.
Well, he's been fired. He was in college and he was fired.
Fired at a college even, right?
Yeah. He was fired from a small college job because it didn't work out. It's one thing when you play against high school kids. It's another when you play against college kids. Okay. We'll wrap it up with the Rams in Arizona, which is an interesting game. Rams are 8.1 yards per attempt. TDs 41, interceptions 18. So Stafford's having a hell of a year. 101.6. Arizona's 7.8, which is nice, and that's because Kyler Murray can throw the ball down the field. 27-11, which is also really good. His passer rating is 100.6. Stafford's is 101.6. Interesting.
Yeah.
Points for Rams, 460. Points against, 372. So that's a plus 88. Arizona, 449 for, 366 against. So that's right on the average or close to the average of what playoff teams give up. So it's not a great playoff defense, but it's pretty good. And that's plus 83. And the Rams are plus 2, giveaway, takeaway, and Arizona an amazing plus 12. So this game, like the Bills-New England game, where weather will not be a factor here, is about as close.
Yeah.
And this will come down to, can the Rams keep Kyler Murray in the pocket? Because as you saw in the Indianapolis game, if you keep him in the pocket, he doesn't do as much harm as when he's out of it. And of course, they played twice before. So there used to be a rule, by the way, that you could not play in the opening round a team from your own division. In this case, we have two, but that's fine. The change is good. The seeding should determine.
And we saw this movie on Monday night a couple weeks ago. So maybe it'll
be. Yes, we did. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. Yeah. That'll be interesting. But to me, the Bills, New England and Rams, Arizona are the two tightest games. Everywhere else, well, Dallas 49ers could be tight.
Could be.
Although I rather doubt it.
I think that game's going to get off the rails in a hurry.
All right, we'll see. All right. I'm still putting on my Jimmy G. But, Bill, what do you think of moving it to Monday night? How do you like it?
I don't like it. I don't like ever playing on a short week in the playoffs. But that ship has sailed. So, you know, figure out how to do it.
There's no way that they'll put that team on Saturday, right?
No. They won't do that.
They won't do that. The only thing I was thinking is, you know, when we went through like 2 weeks there where we had NFL football every night, I guess this is what the fans are expecting now, and to lengthen it out and be able to tune in every night. And the league likes that, right? I mean, they get ratings more.
But also think about it. It's a holiday weekend from a TV perspective. It's, you know, you get the 3 games Sunday, you get 2 Saturday night, and you get another bite of the apple on Monday. As an entertainment property, it makes sense.
That's what I mean. Another night to dominate ratings, you know. So, and it's, and they have a great game. It's not like they put a dog in there. They put a great game in there.
From the perspective of the league office, you know, it works. And from the perspective of generating money from television, it works. Does it work for the teams? No, but that's not the, you know, 25 years ago, that would have been unthinkable. You would never put a team on Monday night and expect them to play in the divisional round of the playoffs on a short week. That would have been unthinkable. Nowadays, everyone shrugs their shoulders and says, oh, well, okay, it's part of the game.
That's right.
Let's see if somebody gets boned by being the 4 o'clock game on Saturday. There's no way, right? There's no way they'll do it.
No.
That would be really, there are some things you can get away with in the league office. There are others that, where you're really pushing the envelope, and that would be pushing.
Because the only thing I'm thinking is
that wouldn't be
if Arizona wins, and then, you know, Arizona going to Green Bay. I don't know. Is that might be the least sexy game of next weekend? That could be the 4 o'clock game.
No, TV always wants Green Bay.
Yes,
in the playoffs in prime time.
Okay,
and they pray for snow.
Exactly.
Because it looks better on television.
The frozen tundra. That's what they want.
But TV, the biggest game would be Dallas and Tampa, right?
Yeah, but you could put that game in prime time on Saturday.
Yeah, no, it's true. I think it's going to be interesting. I think if Arizona wins, well, we'll see what happens next week.
In fact, the league office makes the argument, spurious as it is, that if you're playing on prime time on Saturday night as opposed to 1 o'clock on Sunday, it's virtually the same. It's not, but they make that argument. It's like this, the argument they make for Thursday night football. Well, you know what? You get that mini bye afterwards. The players love that.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But what about going into the game?
Although Tennessee's probably going to be the Saturday 4 o'clock slot. Because if you think
I don't know about that.
But think about it, Bill. You probably are going to have Cincinnati or the Raiders, right? So that's probably the 4 o'clock game on Saturday, I would think.
I don't know.
Well, because the other game would be Buffalo and Kansas City. That's a night game.
Well, you know, Tennessee, we used to joke that when Tennessee and the Colts were good and competing for the division lead every year, that game went as far as Murfreesboro, Tennessee, and Hamilton County, Indiana. No one else in America saw it.
Exactly.
That's my hard money guess is Tennessee versus either the Raiders or Cincinnati will be the 4 o'clock Saturday game.
Yeah, maybe.
Major markets are major markets.
And Green Bay at night in frigid temperatures is
that changed, right?
It's gonna be fun. All right, gang. Well, that is our look at the wild card weekend. As usual, it's gonna be a fun one. Sit back, relax. It's a holiday weekend. A lot of football ahead of us. Next week, we'll take a look at who played well in the wild card, what we can expect in the divisional round. Thank you as always, guys.
Thank you.
Enjoy the weekend.
Exactly.
Life is a highway, and on it there will be many chicken sandwiches. But there's only one McCrispy, so go ahead and hit the turn signal if you know about this juicy gem of a detour.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.